Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Goddess Alive Radio. My name is Kimberly Moore, and I am your humble goddess hostess this evening for Goddess Alive Radio. I am the priestess and founder of Mother House of the Goddess. And tonight, we have a wonderful guest, one of my favorite people, like, in the universe. We have author and priestess Anne Key, who is also the founder and managing editor at Goddess Inc. Media. We are going to be talking Mesoamerican goddesses. She's going to teach me how to pronounce things. She's going to teach all of us, I hope, because I butcher them every time I say them. And we're also going to be talking about her fabulous Sacred Goddess Tour to Mexico City that is upcoming in June. So, lots of good things going on this evening. And I just want to do a little quick housekeeping as we are starting the show. There are some new offerings up on Mystery School of the Goddess. I encourage you to pop over there and check them out, mysteryschoolofthegoddess.net. And we have so many gorgeous things going on. I stand in just, you know, complete gratitude to the marvelous women that have kind of circled to teach and participate in Mystery School. Normandy Ellis is with us, beginning with the Feast of Light, a year of Egyptian goddesses. And the first goddess we will be celebrating is the goddess Nais and the Festival of Light. So you can either do quarterly payments for the whole year because she's going to teach every month, or you can just buy 1 month. So please join us over there as well. Molly Reamer, our gorgeous Molly Reamer, who is the founder of Bridget's Grove and Woods Priestess, has put up Woman Spirit Initiation, a course in practical priestessing, and that will begin March 21st, but she's taking pre-registers now. And we have the Magdalene Activation, an e-course with Lorianne Lumby. So, you know, plus all the other awesome offerings that are on there, there is Goddess for everyone. And this Saturday night is the Goddess Full Moon Group. And funny enough, we have Anne Key coming as our special guest priestess. And we're going to be honoring and celebrating the goddess Sekhmet. There is nowhere else, I guarantee you, that has this much goddess going on and this many amazing priestesses and women that have come together. So please join us. We would love it. And so delighted to have you here. If you pop over to motherhouseofthegoddess.com, we have some great articles. And in fact, one of the first Mesoamerican goddess articles is up. I'm not going to say it. I'm going to make Anne say it. So, you know, you can only, you know, butcher the name so many times. And so without further ado, let's go ahead and get Anne on so she can, you know, school us a little bit and share some wonderful stories about Mexico City. Anne, are you there?
I'm here. So excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Kim.
Oh, I'm so delighted you're here, really. And I was, like, so excited. I'm like, finally, I'm going to ask Anne how to pronounce everything.
Well, I hope I don't disappoint.
I love the Aztec goddesses. I love the Mesoamerican goddesses. Their stories are fascinating. Their traditions are fascinating. So let's start with, how did you become interested in them?
Well, in 1988, I went to visit my sister who was living in Mexico City at the time. And I fell in love with the city, and I fell in love with the culture. I had been to some other parts of Mexico, further closer to the border. I'm from Texas. And I love museums, and I started going to the museums. And I was amazed at how many female figurines were in the museums, how many pre-Columbian female figurines were there. And so I just started on my own researching, and then led to years of researching, and 15 years after that, I wrote a dissertation on the Cihuatateo, which is a Mesoamerican goddess. And I probably almost annually, sometimes more than once a year, I am in Mexico City. It's just my second home.
Oh my gosh, how beautiful. And it's really interesting that that's preserved there so much. You know that in the museums and everything. Is it really, I mean, so many of us, Mexico is like, you know, Cancun, Puerto Vallarta. I mean, like kind of the
Right.
more touristy destination. So to know
Yeah.
that this is underlying it is really cool.
Right. I mean, when you go, if you go to any, I mean, Mexico has world-class museums, which is just wonderful. Not everything had been taken to, say, the British Museum or other places. There's so much there. And when you look at the figures and statuary and everything, there are far more female idols, figures, than male. And it's just there's just a preponderance of, I just feel like really great female energy around the whole thing.
Oh, so interesting. And
I
how
mean the
aware am
well the they just recently unearthed a new Tlatecuhtli, which is the earth goddess, and she is 13, let me see, 11 feet by 13 feet, a
Oh
big
my
square.
God.
I know. I mean, like, massive. These figures are massive. Massive figures, the female divine. It's amazing.
Well, I know the Coatlicue is a big one too. I mean, isn't that I've seen pictures of her.
Yes. How
And
tall? Oh,
she's
let me look up see how tall she is.
dynamic.
She's definitely taller than a
Yeah.
human. I mean, she's sort of on this stand too. Oh, so she's 11 feet, 11 feet 4 inches.
Wow.
And she was in the main temple in, or called Templo Mayor, the main temple that's now the Zocalo of Mexico City. So,
Oh my gosh. That's so
and
cool.
on
So,
Coatlicue, on her,
oh, thank you. See, I
so you've got
butchered
this big,
it,
oh no,
didn't
I do too. I kind of, I'm not so great at it either. But on of her, this 11-foot amazingness of her, under her feet, there is another Tlatecuhtli, which is the earth goddess, underneath her. So not only is she a representation of female divine, but she is connected with that, with the with this carving on the bottom of the statue. It's
Oh my God.
beautiful. It's really beautiful.
That is so beautiful. Well, one of the articles, because you gave me a several to share. So I did let's see, Chicomecoatl. Is that am I saying
Chicomecoatl.
it?
Yeah, you
Yes.
just the T and the L, you just kind of swallow them up together.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, good. And
Chicomecoatl.
Chicomecoatl. It's so pretty. I mean, they're so lyrical when you say them. It's really cool. So the goddess of sustenance, and actually, one of the other articles I have referenced, and I can't wait to share it on Mother House, is about, here we go, Tlatelolco, right? Did I say that
Yes,
right? Yeah,
Tlatelolco. Yeah.
the goddess of silk. So tell us a little bit about some of these goddesses. How do they weave into the Mesoamerican mythology?
Well, Chicomecoatl is, I love, my favorite representation of her is she has on sort of a ball player outfit. Like the knee pads and the other things on her. And then she has, out of her neck, come seven serpents that are braided up. It's just,
Yeah.
I don't know. You have to really love these really these images that are, they're not like what we, that come from sort of more of a European art background. They're not what we're used to seeing. But then once you understand them, they just become so, just so beautiful.
Oh my goodness. And for our
Tlatelolco too,
listeners, yeah, well, and I want to talk about her because her iconography is really interesting. But for Chicomecoatl, go to motherhouseofthegoddess.com for our listeners, and the picture that Anne is talking about is in the article. And it is so cool. I mean, so what has them, you know, replacing her head or where her head would be with the serpents? Uh-huh. What does it mean?
Right. Well, you know, I mean, I don't know that we always know that.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, this is a culture that left a more things that were more ideographs, more drawings, more imagery than words. I mean, to know kind of what these pieces were, we have the codices, which were the books that they left.
Yeah.
Many,
uh-huh.
many were burned by the Spanish, but we still have a number of them. And they are all drawings. So it's sort of like reading, but it's not like hieroglyphs. Do you know what I mean? It's not like a drawing as a word. It's they're stories.
Concepts. I mean, it embodied a concept in just one picture versus a word.
Right. Yes, right. Yeah, more like an ideograph in some ways.
Mm. Yeah.
But, you know, different than Chinese, too. I'll have to think about that. But the other piece that we have is that we do have a number of the clerics, the Spanish clerics that were there in the 1500s. So when the Spanish, like, arrived in Mexico in the 1500s, Tenochtitlan, which is the capital where Mexico City is, had 200,000 inhabitants. So we're not talking about like a little village. We're talking about 200,000 inhabitants, and they and what, you know, Tenochtitlan was built on a lake, Lake Texcoco, and so it was all the waterways were. They had little little fields called chinampas, which are like these little like fields of dirt that they had sort of put together, and they floated, and that's where people did all their agriculture. So basically, I mean, they had the Spanish were just shocked. The soldiers were amazed at how clean and beautiful it was. They were just, especially coming from Europe in the 1500s, you know.
What?
And having been on a ship for a while, which, you know, we know how that goes. But so this is a very highly, a very well-established society, and with long-standing myths, rituals, and a very developed religion. And so when the clerics were there, of course, the Spanish, they were like, their first thing was they needed to, you know, of course, they were charged with converting them to Christianity. But they also wrote down the rituals and stories of the Aztecs and the Maya. And so that's one of the places where we can discover. Of course, you know, we're seeing it through a man's perspective, right? And a Christian or Catholic, you know, monk's perspective, and always trying to filter through those things. So sometimes it's a little hard to dig through, but.
Right. So what was their interpretation for so many female images? I mean, did they comment that, you know, on the heathenness of, you know what I mean? Like, you know, is
the clerics?
Arrived?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's why we have so much trouble that, you know, of course, the clerics were not allowed into women's rituals or women's ceremonies. You know, so they wrote mostly about what men had done. But we still get to see little glimpses of the worship and honor of these female deities.
It's so interesting. Now, was it very, agriculturally based? Is this where so many, Xicomecoatl is like a maize goddess, you know, so we understand, you know, corn woman and all of that. But like, let's go for Tezcatlipoca, who is known as the goddess of filth. She fascinates me, and I have to tell you, like, ever since I read your article, she's in my goddess box I do readings with. I love her. I mean, she's so interesting. So can you tell
she's
us
pretty amazing.
A bit about her?
Well, you know, what's kind of interesting too is that she was called the I believe that that Sahagún, which is one of the most famous Spanish clerics, called her Venus, which is sort of funny.
Yeah, I know.
It's sort of interesting pieces that there. So she's called the Eater of Filth because people made their confessions to her before they died. And then she, so she's often seen with black around her mouth as if, you know, she has eaten that filth. And that black was rubber. And so the Olmecs, so, you know, we've got the, you know, we're talking this giant culture here, right? So the Olmecs were the first formal civilization, we might say, that we have record of in Mesoamerica. And they were in the Veracruz area, which is on the coast, on the Gulf Coast, not the side where Puerto Vallarta is, but the other side. They used rubber for many ritual purposes. And the first ball game that was played, the ball was made of rubber. And so they often used, and this rubber was black and tacky, and they would put it on the statues of Tlazalteotl around her mouth. So there was this, there's this very, I mean, it's kind of like, I think of it like the lotus growing out of the, you know, the murky gunk at the bottom of the pond is
right.
The same kind of idea here. You have this murky gunk like rubber, but yet it is like the sacred beginning of all. And so that's where she comes in there.
It's a fascinating concept that she eats the confessions, you know, and purifies, and in so doing, purifies her devotees. I mean, that's just the whole thing is so
right.
tremendous. And at the same time, she's also the goddess of kind of like pornography and carnal desire and kind of
naughty
and messy everywhere.
That's right. She's quite sexual, which is why she was connected with Venus. By the clerics.
So and her image, which was like really entertaining when I saw it as well. She's got a pointy hat and she rides a broom. I mean, come on.
I know. Okay. Well, let me tell you about her pointy hat and then she's got that snake in her hands, which is great. So if you look at that particular image, that's a pretty famous one. So in her hat, those are actually spools of cotton.
Oh,
and, unspun cotton. And so it connects her to weaving, which is, women in Mesoamerican culture, women had a huge place in commerce because they controlled the weaving. I mean, they were not... they were very much a part of the economics of the household and Mesoamerican life. And so she's connected with that. And then you also see she's got rolls of fat, which I really love. So she's got these rolls on her tummy.
Yeah.
And so that means that she's given birth.
Mm.
Because you know how often a woman's stomach will have, do you know what I mean? Rolls like that after they've given birth.
Yeah.
So that signifies her as a mother as well.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
They're so fascinating. I've always loved them.
Yeah. Well, she's amazing. And then that nose ring that she has is a lunar symbol as well.
Oh,
I think what's interesting, too, is her connection with the color black and that idea of black being rich and fertile, which to me is also like Sekhmet. I mean, not to segue into another culture, but in a completely different way, Sekhmet, whose statues are black, was connected with the fertility of the dark earth on the Nile after the flooding. So this idea, this black... is a very, looking at black as fertile is something that we see in a number of different cultures.
Well, it's interesting with the Greeks as well. There are references to the Chthonic Demeter with the rich alluvial soil in some of her translations and things. So, you know, same thing. That deep, dark soil. And we know what that soil looks like. I mean, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to say Aztec because I'm probably, although the Maya as well, it seems to me there's quite a bit of synchronicity in some cases with the Vedic imagery and Egyptian imagery. It's really fascinating to kind of see that these cultures that were so far apart from each other have kind of repeating themes. I mean, you know, comparative mythology is fascinating, but, you
right.
know, it seems like the Mesoamerican is quite pronounced.
Well, and they're all three of those are pre-Christian. And so I think really after Christianity, we have a lot of, especially with colonialization that happened with Christianity, we have a lot of the sanitization of deities.
Yes. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, we have Tonantzin turning into La Virgen de Guadalupe. Do you know what I mean? So we have like the less carnal images are, I think, the post-Christian connections there.
Right. Well, for sure, the Aztec Maya, the Egyptian, I mean, all of them are, you know, they're pretty primal. They're very primordial.
Right.
And the images are very primal and very evocative.
Oh, yeah, they are. They're so evocative.
Yeah. I know. So I am loving, now, let's switch gears a little bit too, because I want to make sure our listeners do understand. You can see the Mesoamerican goddesses. You can go on a tour in June. I'm planning on it, saving my pennies, to go with Ann Key and Veronica Iglesias to Mexico City for a goddess tour. Tell us about this, and tell us about Veronica and you and how you guys kind of got together for our listeners who may not be familiar.
Well, you know, I should start out by saying the study for feminists and goddess people, studying Mesoamerica is pretty lonely. Mesoamerican cultural studies are very male-oriented, and they're really not that interested in having women be a part of it and not very interested in the female aspects of things. So when I was working on my dissertation, and, you know, it's, I don't know, it's an interesting academic field. But anyway, I had always hoped to meet another woman that was working on these same things that I was. And so this, you know, years go by, and I do my research in Mexico, and I do my dissertation, and blah, blah. And then I end up moving here to Albuquerque, and I meet this woman who is a devotee of Sekhmet, and she introduces me to Veronica. And so we met by happenstance. And when I met Veronica, who she has her master's degree in Mesoamerican studies from the Autonomous University of Mexico City, which is the most prestigious school in Latin America, and really the hub for this sort of research, and that she was a goddess devotee and a priestess, I was just like, oh my gosh, I have met the person I've been waiting all of my life to meet. And she and I do a lot of things here in Albuquerque together around priestessing and ritual, and I'd always wanted to take a tour to take people to Mexico. People have asked me to do it for years and years. And she is a priestess of Ixchel, and so she's taken a lot of tours on the Mayan end, whereas I'm more Aztec or Central Mexican focused. But she is from Mexico City, so this is, you know, her homeland. And so we put this tour together, and it's wonderful because she brings with her a wealth of ritual, as well as study and steeped in this culture for all of her life. I bring some more of the academic pieces and these sort of modern or more European feminist academic pieces, as well as I'm really good at shopping.
And I love you.
Veronica's not the biggest shopper. And I'm like, let me tell you, this. There needs to be a certain amount of shopping on this trip. You know what I mean? Just a little bit of shopping. But there are so many, some of my most treasured items I've gotten in Mexico because they're just some beautiful places. So we built the trip around a couple of things, and one of them was that we could go to the Saturday market, the Sabado Bazaar in San Angel. It's right in one of the little suburbs of Mexico City, where they have this amazing art and craft fair that I went to in 1988. It's been going on for years and years, obviously.
Oh, my God.
And it's just a real beautiful, just an outpouring of arts and they have a whole part of the park that's devoted to just paintings, you know, like canvas painting art. So you get to just see all these people's art, and then there's carving, and there's weavings, and there's tin workings and jewelry. My favorite earrings I've gotten at this place. So we're going to have a lot of ritual and just a couple of, you know, shopping.
Right. Shopping is like ritual. It is, and how do we, you know, stock our altars? We have to shop for our jewelry. Come on.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of, there's some very good altar shopping on this.
I'll bet. Yeah. It could be like, yeah. I'll be trying to ship things home that cost as much as the trip, I bet. So,
and you get free, because you're going out of state, you get two pieces of luggage for free. So.
Oh, my goodness. So you bring, that's how you do it. You pack half a suitcase, and the other suitcase and a half is for shopping.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if I'm offering an optional tour of Puebla, which is like the day before the regular tour starts, and I've been going to this outlet, factory outlet for Talavera pottery since probably like 91, and they have great prices, and it's just beautiful, beautiful hand-painted Talavera. And the exchange rate is really quite favorable now. So
that's fantastic. Well, your tour for our listeners, the early bird is $1,199, $1,200 for June 26th to July 2nd. That is like unheard of for a sacred goddess tour, especially with guides like Anne and Veronica. I mean, you're not going to get out of this country for under $4,000 usually for a goddess tour, $5,000.
Right.
Honestly. You know,
and we're also going to have rituals at a number of different places, two different goddesses. We're going to go to a pulqueria, which is where they take the maguey and turn it into pulque, which is a drink that's owned by a friend of Veronica's. We're going to do a ritual there for Mayuel. We're also going to have a temazcal, which is the traditional sweat lodge of the area. Of, you know, a Mesoamerican sweat lodge. And so I'm really just excited about all the things that, the rituals and pieces that we're going to be able to do thanks to Veronica, the piece that she brings. So.
And chocolate.
And we're
going to
see
chocolate.
Some amazing museums. Oh, chocolate, yeah. And what do you say? Chocolate.
Aztec chocolate.
Yes. And in fact, we have one lunch planned at Cafe Tacuba, which is this great restaurant in Mexico City. And the chocolate is the drinking chocolate is just out of this world. Last time I was in Mexico City, Veronica happened to be there at the same time. And so we got to go have chocolate together at this one restaurant. And it's on the list to go to. So.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, this is so exciting. Yeah, and going to Frida Kahlo's home, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
Talk about woman into goddess. I mean, so many of us adore Frida and, you know, her energy and inspiration. It's a beautiful trip, and I'm really seriously, like, very excited. It's really funny because I'm kind of going, you know, I look at all the sacred tours, and I get excited, and I think, oh, that'd be so cool. This is the first one that I've really been like, oh, I have to go. Like, I really felt like I had to go. It was really funny. I'm like, wow. And it was kind of unexpected, you know?
It is really going to be fun. It's going to be both. It's going to be fun and it's going to be deep. We're going to have limpias and the temazcal, which are two great chances for, you know, healing and cleansing. And then I'm adding on an extra day at the end of the tour, too, for people that want to do an extra day. And we're going to go to the Mercado Jamaica, which is a huge Mexican market. I mean, this is Mexico City. It's one of the largest cities in the world. So you can imagine that the markets are amazing, just huge. And this is the flower market. So it has all of the flowers. There's a picture on the Facebook, or, you know, even on the piece that you put up, any of that picture of the roses is from there.
Oh.
So we're going to go to the flower market and go to the spice section of the market and, you know, just all the fun things. And so I want to do, like, all pieces of Mexico City. And we're going to two little towns outside of Mexico City. We're going to go to Tlaxcala and Malinalco, which will be – they're just a couple-hour drive, so we'll have a nice bus. We'll have a couple-hour drive there, and we're going to be able to do really beautiful ritual out there where it's great, great female energy, and it's just quiet. So we're going to get out of the bustle of Mexico City for a couple of times. So, but we are going to stay in the same hotel in Mexico City the whole time, so it won't be like packing and moving stuff. So once you've bought that piece that you might break, you can just stay in the hotel room. So.
Good. Oh, and I love the spice markets. When I would travel to the Middle East for work, I mean, I would come home reeking. I mean, it was almost embarrassing walking through, you know, when I would get back to London to my apartment, because, like, I stunk up the tube, and people were like, "What's that smell?" Like, and don't mind me, it's just a saffron and everything else that I'm, like, dragging along behind me, you know?
Right.
I love it. Oh, that's so fun. So fun. And what kind of, now, when you're talking about ritual, too, so for people listening, what could we expect? I mean, what does ritual in modern day for these deities look like?
Well, that's more of a Veronica question than an Anne question.
Okay,
but I know
good.
That
well,
the ritual for Mayuel that we're going to do at the out at Tepoztlan, I think it's really going to be a way to connect to these goddesses in their land and in their ways. So,
yeah.
You know, we use copal. Do you use copal ever? But you know
do.
What I mean, right?
It's on my Ishel altar. I use it for her all the time.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there's always a lot of copal in Mesoamerican rituals. There's sometimes dancing. And there's just really opening to the energy of these goddesses in the place where they've been, you know, honored. And are still honored. So
yeah. And how aware? I mean, how much is this integrated into modern Mexico? I mean, is it more of that's the history, or are people kind of on a reclaiming mission for some of this?
There definitely are people on a reclaiming mission, and I think. Well, I mean, you know, there are people on a reclaiming mission, and then like in areas of southern Mexico and like Guatemala and those areas. I mean, there's continuing traditions too. So there's some reclaiming, some continuance of tradition, and you know, it's really there's really a beautiful interweaving of it. I mean, in some places you have sort of syncretism of Catholicism and pre-Columbian culture. And in some places, you have it being reclaimed totally in a like in the Zocalo in Mexico City, they have Aztec dancers there that dance all the time. You know, it isn't it isn't just like we're going to dance for the tourists. There's you know, Mexicans are very political. There's, you know, usually a political social movement behind, you know, art that happens. And so there is definitely a political and social movement behind some of the reclaimings of different parts of the culture.
Oh, how fantastic. That is so beautiful. So I was really surprised when you and I were talking about it and you said that you thought that Mexico City was like your favorite city in the world. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And I was a little surprised. Wow, that's really interesting because I don't, you know, I it's funny, I don't think for it as being as close as it is, you know, generally to you know, North America and the United States, you don't think about it that much normally.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like going to New York in the sense that you have, except for it's much larger than New York, but that you have world-class museums. You have people from all over the world that live there and visit there. You have some of the finest restaurants. You have very wealthy people. You have very poor people. You have millions of people in the mass transit. You know, just like you would at New York. You've got street theater. You have street art. You have cafes. You have giant bookstores. Mexico City is, I think it has more newspapers than anywhere else being published every day. Every day you will see people out at a cafe having their coffee with four or five newspapers, reading them all because they each have a different take on, you know, what's going on. So it's very much that literate cafe society, you know, that I just adore. So it's a great place to talk politics, too.
Yeah. Well, you know what's so interesting is that it does not seem to be as affected as some of the border towns by some of the, you know, ugliness going on with the cartels and all that kind of stuff. I know that, you know, I think sometimes because of our media here in the United States, we get a very disparate view of what's going on in Mexico, and we forget Mexico City, and as you said, is bigger than New York City. It's amazing.
Right. I mean, it's somewhere between the third and the fifth largest city in the world. So it's, I think it's 80 million people there, something like that. Or I can't remember. I just looked it up earlier today, and now I've forgotten. But we're going to be in places that are in the historic, the hotel is in the historic district of Mexico City, which is very safe. I mean, they have, you know, millions of tourists every year. So, you know, it's a beautiful spot and a beautiful place to be. And I have traveled to Mexico City a lot by myself. And I've never, I travel on the subway by myself, and I've never had any more issues than I have in, say, Chicago or New York. So, you know,
you just
encounter the same things you encounter in any big city, you know.
Exactly. And you need to be as aware as you would be in any big city.
Right.
You know,
for sure.
Good. So what is Frida Kahlo's house like? I mean, have they really preserved it and it's
Yeah, so there's a couple of houses. Frida Kahlo's house that we're going to go to, and you can see the bed where she spent, you know, so much time, unfortunately, you know, because of her accident and her injuries. And, you know, there's a mirror above her bed so that she could look at herself when she was painting. And so you can see how she kind of, they had it set up so that you can see how she painted while she was in bed. And the courtyard where she was and in her house. And we won't go, but there's also another Diego Rivera's house, too. And we won't go there, but and then Trotsky's house, where she had an affair with Trotsky. I've been to his house, the place where he stayed too. So there's a lot of little hotbed of fun stuff happening around there. So but it's beautiful. Her house is beautiful. It's blue. It's called Casa Azul. And it's blue and it's vibrant. And then and there's a row of, I don't think they're saguaro cactuses, but they're tall, like organ pipe, I think, cacti that make the sort of fence around the house. It's really beautiful. So it's very inspiring. She is so inspiring of how to be honest and forthright and stand in your truth. She's, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, yes. I mean, she kind of exemplifies embodiment of, it's like, wow. She's amazing.
And if I remember correctly, I think there's a there's a little thing with a bunch of her rings in it too, because I think her rings are always so beautiful. But I think we do see some jewelry and rings of hers as well.
Oh, beautiful. Oh my goodness.
It's really nice.
So for our listeners, you want to go to goddess-inc.com. That's where all the goodies are. You can see the tentative schedule and, you know, start looking things up, because that's what I'm going to do.
And it's Ink, I-N-K, like,
Yep, Goddess Ink, as if we're going to ink your body. Yes.
Right, exactly.
Good, good. Well, that is just so marvelous. I love how you put this together, and how exciting that you and Veronica are doing it together. As well, if you, when you're at goddess-inc.com, you click on the About or hover over the About Us, and there's a little blurb that says about Anne and Veronica, and you can, or Veronica and Anne, rather, and you can read some of Veronica's, you know, background, which is fascinating, really fascinating. So we're going to have her come on, the two of you together, to talk a little, you know, update us in a, you know, month or two as to what's going on and everything. It'll be fantastic.
Well, it's wonderful, and I can't think of a better person to do this with than Veronica. So we're very excited for this trip.
Oh, good. And for, of course, too, Anne's most recent book is Burlesque Yoga, Sex and Love. And if you follow Anne, which you should be on Facebook, you get to see all her fabulous pictures from her performances, her burlesque performances. The Green Fairy is one of my most recent favorites. And, and you can get your copy of Burlesque Yoga, Sex and Love. And you're going to be doing some signings in Albuquerque area.
Right, in Albuquerque area. We're going to be at Page One Books this Thursday and Bookworks next Thursday.
Oh, how fantastic. Good. And, you know, for all of us, what's the update on Goddess Inc.? What is exciting coming in the year? What's in the works for publishing?
Well, we are very close to having a new book by Lydia Rule out. It's going to be out hopefully by the beginning of April. And it's a full-color book on her goddess banners for the goddesses of the Americas. So many of the goddesses that we've been talking about tonight are going to be in that book.
Oh, how fantastic. And of course, everybody raved about Lydia's banners at the Parliament of World Religions. I think she did an exhibit there. Yeah.
Yes.
So I know a couple people I've talked to, I mean, commented specifically on that. So that should be amazing to see it as a book.
Oh, that's very evocative. And, you know, we also have a fiction book that I'm hoping that we're going to have that out this spring too. So we're pretty excited about that.
Oh, good stuff. And of course, She Appears, you know, which is the Kuan Yin book by Sandy Boucher, and absolutely another stunning full color book with gorgeous stories about Kuan Yin. You guys have so much good stuff. I mean, you've got Sex Met, and you've got Breed, and, you know, Desert Priestess, which is about Anne's time at the Sekhmet Temple. So there's lots of good stuff. You go to goddess-inc.com. you're going to spend a little time on the site cruising around.
Oh.
It's good stuff. All right. Well, any final thoughts as we, for the Mesoamerican goddesses, is there a book? I'll ask this question. Is there a book for these goddesses that is in English?
Well, and it's really super accessible and meaty. Not really. It's kind of on my list of to do, my to do list.
Oh, gorgeous.
I know, it would be really wonderful. We're going to be putting together a booklet for the trip. So people that are on the trip are going to receive a booklet that'll have a lot of information on each of the goddesses and the places we're going to go. But I, there's really not anything that comes to my mind, actually, that's easy to get into.
Right,
most of the things are pretty academic, you know, so I was just kind of taking a look at my bookshelf, but for the goddesses, they're kind of a little underwritten about, but hopefully we will change that.
Yes. Well, and we always have mystery school. You had mentioned something maybe about a course as well. That would be interesting.
Yes.
So
yes.
Everybody
absolutely.
Stay tuned. All right. Yay. Okay. So with bells on, everybody, goddess-inc.com. Check out Ann Key and Goddess Inc. on Facebook. And lots of good reading, lots of good, and there's courses at Mystery School of the Goddess, you know, on Sekhmet, on priestessing, on shamanic wisdom with Catherine Ravenwood, all coming through Goddess Inc. So check it out. You guys have so much going on, and you're like me with all the Shakti arms, right? You know?
Yep, lots of Shakti arms.
Yep, we could cover off 1,000 probably, so... That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much. I love you so much, and I appreciate you being here and sharing all this good stuff with everyone tonight.
Oh, thank you, Kim. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. Thanks. Thanks for everything.
Thank you. Thank you. And to everyone who has been listening in, thank you so much. If you have any questions, and it's very easy to find. All the links are on motherhouseofthegoddess.com and in the promo for the show as well. Just click away and say hi. And if you have any questions about the trip, you can contact her through the site. So to everyone, I know some people are getting snow. We're having a little cold snap down here in South Florida that I am immensely enjoying. And I wish you an awesome, awesome evening, everyone. I will be back. Oh, my goodness. When will I be back? I don't know. You see, this is Mercury retrograde. Messes with my brain. I will be back Thursday the 28th with Laurie Ann Lumby. And we're going to be talking about Mary Magdalene. And, of course, tune in this Saturday on Mystery School of the Goddess at thegoddessfullmoongroup.com. And Anne will be our special guest priestess. And we're going to be all about Sekhmet. So until then, happy waxing moon, everyone. Stay warm wherever you are, and have a blessed week.